Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. We are coming to you from Late Night Poets, which is a group on allpoetry.com. And you don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along, read the poems with us, and comment in the chat. I am your host, Aphasiana, and with me, I have my co-host, Babbler. Hello, Babbler.
Hey, hey. How's it going?
Awesome. Well, I'm exhausted, but, you know, what's new? It was such a fun week with my family. I was on vacation, so thank you for holding the fort while I was away.
Well, thank you for doing a lot of the pre-footwork. That came in handy. I was very fortunate. And I hope you had a great vacation.
I did. Yeah, it was great to see my parents and my brother and his wife and my grandma, and my nephews are just so adorable. They're 2 and 5, and they change so much in between when I see them. I mean, luckily this time it was only 6 months in between visits, but before that it was 2 years. And so, like, Spencer went from being, like, an infant, like, 2 days old, to talking, like, in my mind, because I didn't see him in between other than, like, pictures. So such a huge difference. And because it was only 6 months this time, they actually, like, remembered me and were enthusiastic. So that felt good, because usually I'm like, oh, I don't know who I am. But this time they were fighting over who gets to sit beside me, so that felt nice. I'm a troublemaker, causing the conflict. How was your week? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Just call me Grandma. So I don't get them off the busy live on the side of this. Who I was, even though they lived next door to me for a really long time. But they're little. You know, like, my niece is 5, and my other niece is 2. And every time I see them now, they call me Grandma. My mom is Grandma Sue, and their dad's mom is Grandma Jill, and I'm just Grandma.
You know, it's easy for them to get confused. It took about a week to help my nephew understand, like, how I was connected to him. Because, you know, first I visited my brother's house and the kids there, and then the next time he saw me, I was at my parents' house, and I'm sitting with my mom, and the little 5-year-old comes in, and he's like, why are you with my grandma? And I'm like, because she's my mom. And he was just like, you know each other? He's just so surprised. I'm like, yeah, remember how I'm your aunt? That means that I have the same parents as your dad. And he was just like, what? It's adorable. We spent a lot of time, like, showing him, like, family tree kind of things, like, so he understood. Like, the day he's saying goodbye, he was like, I understand now. You have the same mom as my dad, and so that's why you're my aunt. And so that means my grandma is your mom, and your grandma is my great-grandma, and that's your dad's mom. I was like, that's right. But he was, like, so proud that he figured it out. But that's the 5-year-old. The 2-year-old calls everyone mom and then follows that with their name. So I'm Mom Auntie.
Oh, nice.
my dad is Mom Ampa. Everything starts with mom. So his brother's like, he just likes mom a lot, so he says that. And I'm
just like, okay. I think to him maybe it means relative. Like family member,
yeah.
Mom.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a relative, or, you know, someone that he likes. Nathan says it's, the older one says it's just, that's what he, you know, if he likes you, then he's gonna call you mom. So I'm like, okay.
Right.
So sweet.
I think I get called grandma just because I look so much like my mother. Like, we look very similar.
That makes sense.
We always have. Like, even my mom used to have a picture of herself, her own baby picture, up on the wall when she was about 3. And everyone always assumed it was my baby photo. Always, because that's exactly what I looked like at that age. And if you take any of our pictures at any age and take us at the same age, side by side, I mean, we look like twins. I look very much like my mother.
Yeah, that would be confusing for the little one. So it makes sense. You're just young grandma.
Yeah, I look really very, very much like my mother. The only difference is my hair is curly, but you can never tell because I always have it in a bun. So completely understand their confusion. I look just like my mom. That's why I get called grandma.
I think it's cute.
I'm glad you had a good vacation.
I did, except for the trip home, but, you know, Air Canada is not ideal. You tend to get stuck places. that's just how it is. But while I was in the airport, I was looking at this I don't even know where I saw it. There was something about contronyms, and I had to look them up because I was embarrassed to say I didn't know what that was. So I was like, what's a contronym? And it's kind of the opposite of a – actually, I'm going to read the definition so I don't say it wrong. So it's single words that have two contradictory meanings. So they are their own opposite. And examples that I found are apology, which can be a statement of contrition for an action or a defensive one. Bolt is to secure or to flee. Bound, heading to a destination or restrained from movement. Cleave, to adhere or to separate. Dust, to add fine particles or to remove them. Fast, quick, or stuck, or made stable. Left, remained, or departed. Peer, a person of the nobility or an equal. Sanction, to approve or to boycott. Weather, to withstand or to wear away. So my contest, which does not have very many entries at all, which is because it's such a tricky one, is that I asked people to make a poem using some contronyms so it could have multiple meanings. Because with these opposite meanings within one word, imagine how a poem with a few of them could create multiple interpretations. So I just thought it was a fun exercise. And we only have 3 entries for that, so we're going to be doing more than one contest tonight. But that's the first one that we're going to dive into. This is the kind of thing that I come up with when I'm stuck in the airport for 7 hours in between flights. Okay, here we go. We're going to start with Oxymoron by Huba Chai. And Babbler, would you read that one for us?
Absolutely. This is Oxymoron by Huba Chai. Google defines contronym as contronym, noun, a word with two opposite meanings, e.g. sanction, which can mean both the penalty for disobeying a law and official permission or approval for an action. Man cannot skate away on the notion of pleading contronym for misleading men, can he? Way, way, way back when ignorance was honest, understanding not in command. The observation that created a movement deserved a clear, empowering message for men. We don't know why we're doing this, but we are the only mammal males doing such things, so it must mean that we are the ones out of line. So here are the boundaries we do decree and set forth for all men in every culture and country, and if conforming isn't easy for you, come and ask us. That's why we're here, to help you overcome. Is it a contronym that wasn't the message? Man first created for man so very, very long ago. Centuries of legal rape-mindedness might never have happened in the second place if that had been the message in the first place. Just saying. Now men will never know where would their conscious development be, only because they were denied that approach. Every time man observed something related to man's unnatural sexuality and appetite, societal street punishment, the penile criminal system, still man lives in a world where he makes unsafe man's sexual governance. For men of all things, like unhealthy and misleading governance, is natural still in this 21st century, and that now just isn't the time to begin to make ethical, reformative steps in an ideological and societal ways. Barf. When that is simply just not the truth, but still the way it is, and all are powerless as to when men might choose to let go of their ideological penis so there's cognitive room for their biological penis to have a safer place in this world. End poem. Well, this is really kind of an intense piece. I mean, it has a kind of anger to it that almost feels like a slam poetry piece, especially with the rhythm and the line breaks in it, you know, and to talk about, you know, how rules for society, like taboos and standards and norms and that kind of thing, were put into place by us to limit ourselves and to make things, you know, unnatural that didn't need to be unnatural. So it's kind of an interesting thing, you know, talking about how men both empowered themselves and hogtied themselves at the same time. I do enjoy some of the wordplay here, like especially like the penile criminal system instead of penal, you know, because it's very, you know, it's almost a homophone, but not quite. But I enjoy it. I mean, it is, but I don't know, I read words differently, but they're very similar sounding. And so I enjoyed that wordplay, and there's a few different wordplays in here, which I think kind of touches on that contronym idea. Not to mention that I think the contronym idea here is touched well, as well as the overall concept of, like, by giving themselves more power, by empowering themselves, they also limit themselves, you know. I do find some phrases really interesting in here, you know, like legal rape-mindedness, kind of interesting as a concept, you know, and to talk about like unnatural sexuality when there's really nothing, you know, particularly unnatural about sexuality, except for the human laws and taboos against it. Anyway, I just found it a very interesting piece that touches on a lot of different concepts about patriarchy and rulemaking, and there's just a lot of interesting concepts tucked in here, and I enjoyed the piece overall. I thought it was well done. What did you think of Fasiana?
Yeah, it was interesting. It took me by surprise. This wasn't really what I was expecting, but I thought it was powerful. You can definitely like feel the edge to it. I think you were right when you said it was like a slam poetry kind of piece. Like I could hear this performed with anger. I think that you summed it up so well, Babbler, in the way that you were talking about the contradictions of people limiting themselves and empowering themselves at the same time, particularly, you know, men in the past creating laws, and how that kind of influenced society in ways that that restrict them, but also gave them power. It is kind of a circle of confusion that relates to the concept of a contronym. I liked the wordplay too that you pointed out, the penal system and how that works with the penis references. I think this was a creative take on the prompt. It took it places I didn't expect, and I like to be surprised. I think that this was a very sought out piece. It definitely had a strong feeling in it. It's intense, like you said, and I think that it was I'm surprised, but I like it at the same time. really interesting use of the concept of contronyms. Our next one is by Blue Leader One.
Sorry, I didn't realize I was on hold. I'm not hold, but mute. I was just appreciating your comment. To myself, apparently.
Well, I appreciate your silent appreciation. So this poem is called It's So Opined by Blue Leader One. Temper my soul, trim my soul, oh God, weather my soul, or so it goes, because it's dangerous. Ravel me twine, it's so divine, and so opined, cleave me, clip me, or consult me. Child that I am, flog me to the world in this strange city, or give out love, Baby, it is ought, or so I thought. I am so pretty. End poem.
Great read, Ephesiana. I really enjoyed this piece, but I'm finding, you know, I'm reading it through, and the first almost feels like cut me back. You know, like I'm too much is how the first stanza kind of reads to me. You know, temper my soul, trim my soul. Oh, God, weather my soul or so it goes because it's dangerous. You know, it's almost like being too much in some way, like too great or too powerful, which I thought was really interesting. You know, and then ravel me twine, it's so divine and so opined. You know, just like to kind of twist you up, and it still kind of fits into that, like, cutting you back, you know? But at the same time, it's like an opinion. You know, opined is like an opinion. So I found this really interesting. I feel like there's a contradim here maybe that I'm not familiar with the definition of, and I feel like it's kind of hinged on that word opined, you know, to be too big for someone's opinion. Cleave me, clip me, or consult me, you know, so like, again, like cut me down or ask, you know, or ask me, like, or come to me for advice. So I found it really interesting. Maybe you have more knowledge of what the contronym is in here, but I do feel like it's kind of hinged on that centerpiece for both the title and that kind of midline of this piece of so opined. But I loved the work, and I loved the imagery of, you know, just kind of like cut me back to nothing, and then it comes to like child that I am, flog me to the world, which is almost like, you know, I'm so innocent and small. Instead of too big, it's like too small. And then to like take the innocence of that person. I just found it very interesting. And kind of beautiful, like to be both too big and too small, too innocent and too worldly all at one time. Lovely piece. And then the rhyming in here was beautifully done as well. What did you think?
I'm still absorbing it because I'm sure, like, it seems like one that has several places where you have to think about the specific word choices. And really, I wish I read this a whole bunch of times in advance so I could comment more intelligently. So when I think about, like, even just the first word, temper, because on the one hand, it makes you think about, like, you know, a person's temperament. But that made me think about how maybe this is a tempered soul, as in, you know, very easily angered, and to be tempered down, it's like, you know, with metal, you reheat it and then you cool it, and you reheat it and then you cool it to change how hard it is. So there is that back and forth, even in the process of changing the state of it. And then it can be a neutralizing thing too. If their idealism is tempered with realism, for example, in the dictionary.com thing, so act as a neutralizing or counterbalancing force. So on the one hand, it could be making you stronger, like tempered steel, or it could be making you weaker. So it could be, you know, begging to have someone make you stronger, or it could be begging someone to, you know, control you, like neutralize you because you're too big for your own good. So I think even within that first word, there are different options. Same with the weather, weather my soul. It could be, you know, break it down, make it so it's manageable. It could be you know, withstand the fury of my soul. There's so many different ways that weather in itself can be taken. The opined is where I am struggling too, like you said, because it's very clearly an important word. It's in the title. But like you said, it's about opinions. And I can't figure out how that one is a contronym. And maybe it isn't in itself. Maybe it's just about, it's so opined. So it's all a matter of opinion. It's all a matter of opinion in how we take each word and how we interpret each line. It's so opined. It's everything in life is however you take it. There's not one necessarily right way to interpret things or a clear path. So when you look at this person, like you said, to some people, they might be too much, and for some people they might be not enough. And we can never be everything or the right level of something for everyone. So that's kind of how I take the opined. I thought this was really beautifully flowing. Like the rhymes, especially for some reason, I really liked "Baby, it is ought," or "so I thought." Even though "ought" is not the end line, it's definitely where I see it emphasized. "Baby, it is ought," or "so I thought." It's almost like the "or" has its own section. But it's just the "ought" and "thought." For some reason, that like gave it a sort of attitude. I really liked the way that sounded. And then to have "I am so pretty" all by itself at the end. Really, really beautifully done. And even the use of the "sees" in the third stanza, "cleave me, clip me, consult me," with each one starting with the "c," it made that section kind of together nicely.
I like that the first word that you pointed out, "temper," kind of tickled my mind, and so then I started reading through this a bit more carefully on each word that's in here, you know, and then I see like "trim." Well, it can mean cut back, but it can also mean like to add to, you know, like to trim a tree, you know, it's like decorate, you know, is another meaning for that. And then when "ravel," of course, you know, can mean to get all twisted up or knotted, but it can also mean to like untie. You know, to ravel something around like a spool is also called raveling, but technically you're making it neater, you know. And then "divine" has a double meaning as well, because it can be like, you know, godlike or wonderful, but it can also mean like to scry, you know, to try to infer meaning from. So I think that there are a lot of double meanings for words. So I think you're exactly right in your reading of opined. Like, it's all in how you take it. And there's more than one way to take everything. So I think you were exact in that interpretation. So I great observation.
I was thinking about trim, too. And I forgot to talk about that. But I'm glad that you pointed it out. Because I have, like, medieval outfits that I do, people would call them costumes. I call it garb because it's not just costume material. But anyway, they often have trim, which is, like, that you add. Like you said, people think of trimming as, like, what you cut off. But you trim, you add, like, beautiful accents to it, usually around the edges, like the neck or the arms. So you're making it longer and more beautiful. So to trim, it could be, you know, shrink down, or it could be to expand and amplify. There are so many different words with double meaning that I think that was a wonderful entry to the contest, because that really captured, you know, the challenge. Very well done, Blue Leader. Our next poem is by... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Babbler. I was a bit of a delay.
I just agreed with you, that's all.
Agreeing with me? Well, I don't know how smart that is. The next poem is by Daniel Deschino. And would you read that one for us, please?
Sure. This is "What Is Left of My Sanity Has Left" by Daniel Deschino. I would diagnose myself insane, but I might be too insane to diagnose myself. I'm so confused in this land of confusion, constantly tripping on this trip of chaotic contradictions. And I have shopped around till my life is so filled, it looks like the shops I've shopped at, tables so garnished with things bought, I should table my buying. I might just have garnished my salary by shopping the shops. Surrounded by these things, I feel bolted, bound, and buckled, and I try to bolt and bound from this trap, but I only buckle instead. But as long as my life light does not flicker out, I can get out of this handicap that gives me a handicap to bring me equal to most. And I find the help by helping myself, for there is no question whether I can weather the weathering I have before. And I might seem a little wound up, but I do not want to wind up sanctioned while I sanction my plan to keep myself cleaved to the protection of my skin and not get cleaved and skinned of my protection. I hope I'm being transparent enough with my transparency, but I think I will finish before I am finished. End of poem. It kind of dances around. You know, it's like it's rhyming, but it's not really rhyming. It's just a lot of similar sounds because they're similar words that are used. I mean, there is definitely use of my brain is not finding the word, but where they all have similar consonant sounds and vowel sounds. And so it makes it kind of fun to read. And the mouthfeel of the piece is really nice. And then it kind of pokes at the double meanings of the words. You know, it's not hidden or obfuscated at all because it's like, look at this word. I just used it a minute ago, but it means something different and maybe even exactly the opposite this time. You know, there's a playing with word meanings and there's also a playing with contronyms in here. I think that works really well. You know, like bolted and bolt, you know, one meaning like tied down in one place and bolt, the other one meaning leaving, you know, bound as in stuck in one place again, but also bound as in leaping and buckled as in, again, tied into place. But then the other one means like falling down or failing, you know, but because the same word is used within such proximity of each other, it tells your brain, hey, look, it's the same word, but it means something different this time. And yet that repetition of sound also gives us a really playful feeling, like almost nursery rhyme or not quite like a tongue twister because it's not particularly difficult to say, but you're keenly aware of the fact that you're saying the same words repetitively. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun poem to read and also got well at the theme for the contest while, you know, making it obvious to the reader without being like, hey, look, you know, we're beating you over the head with it because it was fun to read. So I thought this was an excellent write from Daniel. What are your thoughts, Abaziana?
I think it was very fun, and I really, really enjoy it. But I was also thinking, as an ESL person, this would be so challenging. Like, can you imagine when you're first starting to learn English and you hear the same word used in three different ways in the same sense? I was just thinking, like, what a challenge this would be when you're first trying to figure out words. So I don't know, I got off on a tangent in my mind about that and about how ridiculous language is sometimes to mean the fact that we have contronyms. My favorite part, I think, was the tabled, which just because I wouldn't have thought of that as one of them, tables so garnished with things bought, I should table my buying. you know, I should think of the word like that, because I'm constantly in meetings where things get tabled because we're not ready to talk about them, or whoever's supposed to present it's not there. But it's rare that I think of table as in that way. So I don't know. I just thought it was a kind of a rare one to touch on. He also used a lot of the ones that were in the examples very well. The bolt bound part that you pointed out is one of my favorites, because it uses both together, and they work together on both lines. Like that's amazing. I feel bolted, bound, and buckled, and I try to bolt and bound from this trap. Like that, both of them work in both ways, connected, is just wonderful. And you can really tell that he put thought into making the words work in their multiple ways. But there's definitely a playfulness to this. I like the handicap one too, because I've always thought that was odd in like golf. Not that I'm a golfer, so I'm really not that knowledgeable about it, but how the handicap helps you. I don't know, I've always had trouble processing that. I can get out of this handicap that gives me a handicap to bring equal to most. It's very clever, the whole thing, and fun, which is a challenge to make, word trickiness so fun. I mean, that's not true, because I'm a nerd and I would enjoy word trickiness. But, I mean, like, I can see with a challenge like this ending up with drier pieces because people are focusing so hard on, like, making the word work. But instead, everyone in this contest has given us feeling. You know, there was anger and there's playfulness. There's all kinds of emotions in all three of the pieces that were entered. And I'm really impressed that they've managed that with the challenge of the words. Very well done. And there was something at the end I wanted to comment on. I think I will finish before I'm finished. I think that's a really good way to finish. well done, Daniel. I appreciate how often you enter the contest and how it's always a wonderful entry. So thank you for that. And now, Babbler, I'm going to get – I just realized you're doing two in a row, but I don't care because it's going to be yours. So you're getting double duty, and you're reading your own.
So this piece is an older piece, but I thought it was interestingly fairly on topic, so I just thought I'd add it to the board. This is positive. The wrinkled white paper sticks to my thighs, and I look at the posters on the wall, the anatomy of a heart that I will not remember. The lighting is more harsh than the words of the man in the white coat. Who knew being positive could be so negative? I feel out the anatomy of my heart to see if it is different from the one on the wall, now that I am positive. My cyclic memory reminds me that the negative words that rolled from my tongue ignored the quaking in his voice. I re-feel the kisses he placed on my cheek before he knew, and I knew, and everything became so positive. I wonder why this positive has to be so negative, because I don't regret us or what we did or how I loved him. The cold blanket cocoons me in my oversized bed. Will anyone see the anatomy of my heart again now that I am positive?
Oh, wow. This is so powerful. I had not read this before, even though it's an older one. I like that you don't even have to say what you've tested positive for, but the meaning and the seriousness of it comes through. The details of the wrinkled white paper sticking to the thighs. I spent quite a bit of time in doctor's offices, and I'm very familiar with that paper. That little detail gives you the setting in that first, in one line. You don't have to say you're at the doctor's office or the hospital. The white paper tells you. And then the poster, continues that. And the lighting more harsh than the words. That's true again. But you're really painting the setting with the paper and the poster and the light. And then the man, you don't even say doctor. You just say the white coat, and then we know. How could being positive be so negative? Who knew being positive could be so negative? That line is, it's powerful in an emotional way, but it also is the play on words that works really well with this topic of tonight, where you would think positive is a good thing and negative is a bad thing. Usually that's how we associate it, but for positive to be the results that you don't want, and that wording can be very confusing in a doctor's office where they're like, the results are negative, and I'm like, negative as in bad or negative as in don't have it. So that play on words really works well there. The negative words that rolled from my tongue, ignoring his quaking voice. Oh, this is so beautiful and intense and just a little bit overwhelming. The cold blanket cocoons me in my oversized bed. And then the ending, I got like tears in my eyes. Will anyone see the anatomy of my heart again now that I am positive? Oh, Babbler, this is amazing, amazing. Such a good poem.
Thanks. Yeah, I thought it just worked really well when I saw your contronym piece. And I'm like, well, I'd kind of played with this idea before with the use of the words positive and negative, because in a medical setting, they really mean, like, usually the exact opposite of what they normally mean. And it's interesting how they flip-flop like that, you know, when being positive can be, like, the worst thing that you've ever heard. And it's even worse when they're positive that you're positive. That's doubly negative. So, I don't know. I just thought it fit well. But, yeah, I think this was one of the first pieces they wrote on all poetry. So,
it's incredible.
It's not that it really matters, but for context on this piece, I actually wrote this because there was this really weird incident that happened to me in college where they called me and told me I had an STD, and I freaked out because I'd been dating my boyfriend since my senior year of high school. And it's like, what? You know? And so I, like, had to call him and tell him and have all these really awkward conversations. And then the doctor's office called me back a week later and said that they read me the wrong results.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is, like, I had to, like, I called them and I'm like, can you please just, like, save that to a voicemail or something? You know what I mean? Because I'm going to sound ridiculous trying to tell my boyfriend this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? you made this really awkward and horrible, like, and you're lucky I'm not, like, suing you for malpractice, but I need you to, like, leave me a voicemail so that I can replay this.
Can you imagine if you, like, broke up with him because of it? Like, you're like,
what?
You cheated on me. Oh, my God.
Like, you just randomly get an STD when you've been dating the same person for 3 years. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, somebody is not being honest. But honestly, I was more concerned that he would be worried that it was me. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, I have not done anything, you know, but it just, it, got me kind of in this tailspin of thinking about, like, all of these scenarios. Like, oh, my God. You know. Anyway, it was not a fun week in my life. So that's kind of the background on this.
Well, like, I mean, it's a relief to know that you're not positive.
So there was, like, a week in my life where I thought I had a lifelong STD. I don't, which is nice, but, like, man, that week was uncomfortable.
I bet.
Please take caution, medical professionals, when calling people with lab results. Okay? I'm just like, what?
It's unbelievable, like, how much things like that happen. I went through an hour-long appointment with the doctor where he was talking to me like I had MS, and then he was like, wait a minute, did you just say you had a seizure? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you've never had a seizure before. And I'm like, I have seizures all the time. That's why I'm here. And he was just like, oh, I have the wrong file. Well, that changes everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad I don't have MS, but, you know, like, pay attention.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
Yeah. Like, the stress I did not need.
They actually, before you have surgery in a lot of places, including where I had my brain surgery, they draw on you with, like, Sharpie to indicate which side needs the surgery. And they get multiple people to check it to make sure they're doing the right side.
Yep.
I'm like, this tells me that it has happened where you went into the wrong side of someone's brain.
I've had a couple surgeries. And on both of my surgeries, they literally wrote what my surgery was on my leg in a marker. So, like, it's not just brain surgery they check that for. They did it when I had gallbladder surgery, and then they did it again another time when I had another surgery. That was, like, exactly what I'm there for.
Yeah, actually, they did with my gallbladder surgery, too. They, like, circled the area and wrote it.
Yeah, like on some kind of whiteboard.
Yeah.
But, if it's what you need to make sure you don't do it wrong, then I'm fine with that. If that's,
yeah.
You know.
If there's any risk of the charts getting mixed up, write all over me. Although I did have one doctor male nurse, who I referred to as crotch pen, because he would, like, use, like, random parts of my body to hold, like, his pens and stuff. Like, it was just, like, I think he thought I was, like, unconscious, but I wasn't. And he would be, like, just sticking things in my armpits, like, just to hold his notes while he did things. Or, like, he used my underwear and bra as, like, a pencil case. And I was just, like, no, this is not okay. But I couldn't talk at the time. But I was just, like, no.
Yeah. That's really weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Strange habits. Mm-hmm.
Strange habits. It was not, like, in a sexual way. It was just a convenient spot. Not okay.
I had a gynecologist once that I changed because during exams she would talk about her personal life, and I just, like, didn't care or find it appropriate.
Yep.
I didn't.
When they're doing,
like,
certain things, you don't want to hear.
Yeah, new doctor, time for new doctor. Like, I, wow, that's nice and all, but no.
I could write a book of all my strange doctor's appointments. I should. Add that to my list. We are now on to our second contest of the night, which is U-turn. Write a poem about a time that you needed to change your life's direction. And this was a pre-write contest, so they're not specifically for the contest, but we are going to have a nice selection here. So I'm going to start with Send Me an Angel by Diane D. Send me an angel. Scars of shame and bitter hatred swelled upon my soul, my heart on ice, my will deceased. Death became my goal. Torment raped my will to live. Rage was howling still. Fear engulfed the shadows on my one-way train to hell. I begged the Reaper, rescue me, hush my cries of pain. Send me an angel of darkness. I will not fail again. But then I heard a voice, so soft and kind, not knowing fear and shame. It said, I was sent to guide you, to hear your cries of pain. Little one, please trust me now. You asked me through my tears. You offered words of comfort to help me face my fears. Cautiously, I listened then to every tender word. You said to me, don't give it power that it does not deserve. I trust your gentle presence now, your caring words of love. Each angel has a face its own, mine a pure white dove. End poem.
Probably read a Feliciano. I kind of like the tenderness of this poem. Like, it's very gentle, even in the beginning. You know, where, even though it says scars of shame and bitter hatred, there's something soft about it, you know, swelled upon my soul. My heart on ice, my will deceased, death became my goal. It just feels soft. Even though it's dark, it's not like cutting or biting. And so I feel like this whole poem has a kind of soft kind of comfort to it. You know, and then to go from being like depressed and tormented and wanting to die, to changing that mindset completely, I think fits the U-turn concept very well, you know, to then, you know, hearing like an angelic voice in it and then change in will, you know, to want to live. And I like the exact words of advice that's in here, you know, don't give it power that it does not deserve. Because I think that's a really good pebble of advice in there anyway, you know, to focus on something that's hurtful and to focus on something that's painful gives that hurt and pain more power and more sway over you than if you can pull your mind off it. Now, that's a lot easier said than done, but for example, the last couple of days I've had horrible anxiety, horrible work stress. I've been really kind of wrapped up and not doing that well from a mental health perspective. And then I went to the post office today, and when I was dropping some stuff off at the post office and I was walking through the parking lot, I saw some Robert geranium, which is a weed, also known as Stinky Bob, because it smells really bad, growing kind of like in the ditch. And at this time of year, it has these really pretty little purple flowers all over it that kind of make like this wildflower patch. And they were pretty, and I had like had to remind myself that like, even when everything is crappy and I'm feeling really anxious, I really just need to find like one little thing to smile about every day to kind of help pull me out of it so that I have something that I can look at or think of that isn't negative, that helps me get out of those mental cycles. So I actually like stopped and took pictures of the little weeds in the ditch and posted it on Instagram today to like, I don't know, just help me feel better. Really works for me as a way to like pull me out of the negative cycles. But I think that tidbit in this poem is a really powerful piece. You know, don't give it power that it does not deserve. If you can stop thinking about the things that make your life horrible and instead think about the things that make your life better, even if they're so tiny, just the littlest thing, it can turn your day around. So I really enjoyed this piece. I think it fit the theme really well. And the rhymes were soft and gentle, and it kind of spoke with a tenderness that I think landed the advice well. It doesn't feel like a judgmental piece about depression. I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at. What are your thoughts, Daisiana?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I loved your comment And that I like your attitude about, you know, trying to focus on something that brings you joy, even though that's not always the easiest thing. And I love that the thing that brought you joy is a weed. You know, with that whole dandelion show we had a couple weeks ago, where sometimes the things that other people see negatively, you can get joy out of it. You can see the beauty in something that other people think is like a pest. I love that the weeds, you know, brightened your day. I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think that what you said about this not being, you know, down on depression, but showing hope for getting past it is really great. It has that turnaround that works so well for the U-turn because, you know, halfway through the poem, her situation and her attitude change. The send me an angel of darkness, resulting in the angel of light, is just beautiful. You know, it would be one thing if she, you know, was crying out for someone to save her, but she's not. She was crying out to end it by ending her life, and instead she found, you know, a positive, I don't know if this is directly, I would say it's a spiritual piece. So to have that, maybe find her faith, I don't know, just feeling connected. That turnaround in the middle really suits the U-turn. And like you said, even in the beginning, when it's, you know, about the difficult times, there is kind of a gentle flow to the way it's written. I don't know if it's the meter or what it is exactly, but it had a gentleness to it. It didn't have the edge of something that was, you know, super dark, even though there definitely is the darkness there that contrasts with the light later on. And maybe that's because it's written after the darkness has passed. So it has a beauty to this. There's a kind of pure feeling of innocence, which might be a strange thing to say because it's talking about like having been through so much and like wanting death, but there's a lightness to this. Where I feel comforted just having read about her feeling comforted. So very well done, Diane. You get your feelings across there.
I think that's a great way to phrase it, is comforting. It is comforting. It's consoling, even though it's conveying a personal pain. It feels like a message to the reader of comfort. And not judgment. Yeah, it's beautifully done.
Agreed. Our next poem has an audio, so I'm going to play that by Jasker Ann. The poem is, I am proud to be a, and then there's a blank, we will hear it in just a moment.
I am proud to be Muslim, even if I get lost in the moment. Ramadan will come to turn the burden past yet again. Because Islam is a fruit and the honesty of our knowledge. I'm proud to be a Jew because I'm always cheerful. My initial after printing altogether cards and just is an end of Islam will say sorry. I want the nation build a home of God's will and plenty. I'm proud to be black. A white will say this is really meaning on that day. I can light up the holding without any light. I am the classic candle figure, pushing energy, and this and how you in the light. I'm proud to be sick. Your entity is a soul, which can never be children. Become a HIV soul as the alien takes her rise and her power. Jenna, and Vicky are fine. It just means you've only got 30 seconds. That's what I'm trying for. I'm on the phone with your 69. Thank you.
I really like this piece. You know, to talk about the pieces of a person. Like, I think everybody has things about themselves that they're proud of. And I think some of those things even are the things that people may or may not expect to be the things that you're proud of. I also find it interesting in this piece that the key things that are pointed out by the author, you know, proud to be a Muslim, proud to be gay, proud to be black, proud to be a Sikh, like, are the things that are stated of what they're proud of. And I'm not saying that those aren't things that they're proud of or things that they should be proud of, but I feel like the ending of this piece really talks about what they're actually proud of, especially the end. You know, your identity is your soul, which can never be stolen, which is a quote, you know. Become such a beautiful soul that everyone craves for your vibes, and a flower which doesn't compete with other flowers. It just blooms in the whole garden with its fragrance. That's what I'm striving for and want the whole world to see through my eyes. That's the actual point of pride, is the blooming for yourself, and loving yourself and using that to, like, highlight other people's beauty and to see the beauty in the things around you in the world. And that's the actual source of the happiness, you know, is the love for oneself. And, you know, the key points, you know, being the things indicated before, but the overall positivity of this piece comes from the mindset, and not the particulars of this one person, which I think is a really beautiful thing. You know, and I do find the word choices in here beautiful too, you know, come to cleanse my pungent past, you know, just the word pungent in there, the alliteration with past, you know, stinky, you know, kind of like, I don't know, I picture like something really strong and like intoxicatingly bad smelling, which I find fascinating, you know, and then because Islam is the fruit, you know, to take that pungent past and replace it with a fruit, I find it a really interesting choice, you know. Infectious laughter, infectious, makes me think kind of interestingly of your other poem contest, the contronyms. You know, infectious laughter is a good thing, but most of the time infectious is not used in a positive context. But here it is, which I really enjoyed. I also loved I am the classic hand-tossed pizza, bursting with energy, embers and heart aglow with delight. Just that classic hand-tossed pizza. I don't know, I picture, like, the person in the pizzeria, like, tossing the dough and, like, the animation of that moment. And somehow that really does fit with, like, joy and bursting energy for whatever reason. but I really loved it as an image. You know, this is kind of like sloughing off a rough past or maybe things that can be associated with negativity by people who are, you know, maybe not the most exemplary people in the world. You know, I'm not any of these things, so I haven't really faced the adversity that comes with being Muslim or gay or black or Sikh, you know. But I understand that those are, like, minority categories that have, you know, anti-religious or racist sentiments often tied with them. So it's good to be, like, proud and happy to be those things in spite of other people's negative associations. Anyway, I really enjoyed this piece. I really enjoyed the positive mindset of it. You know, it's not I'm happy despite. It is I am happy because of. So, wonderful write. What did you think of Faciana?
I think you stole all my comments. But I agree with you for all of that. The alliteration hit me right away with the pungent past, and the idea that the fruit on the hanging low on the tree was ripened and sweet. So it was like it replaced that negativity with something beautiful. Like you say, these are things that, at least in the Western world, sometimes people are negative about all of these categories, but they're actually can be really beautiful things. And so I love the pride there the being Muslim and being gay and being Black and being Sikh, and you know, embracing who he is and finding the positive in absolutely everything, because all of these things are part of what makes his life wonderful. I like what you said about infectious working with the other contests, because it's true. Usually a very negative word, but worked positively here, because laughter being infectious is a wonderful thing. The song we say, Sloppy, I Want to Live on His Tongue. I just love the song we say, Sloppy. It's like... The kissing is like musical, it's so wonderful, but kind of sloppy. I don't know, there's something really cute about that line. And then the hand-tossed pizza, the classic hand-tossed pizza, like you said, I was picturing like the in the little pizzeria too, with the tossing it way up in the air, like I've never seen anyone do in real life, but like that kind of like cartoon TV moment of like really tossing it, and that there's bursting with energy, embers and the heart glow with delight. There's this certain joy of making the pizza and of being the pizza who just like is getting tossed in the air, which makes me think about like at a concert, you know, when people crowd surf. And personally, I would be horrified because I don't like strangers touching me, and just the idea of like all of those hands. But there's this joy for people who are into it of like being held up by the crowd and being the hand tossed pizza. It could be that like you're being held up by everyone, and you're what they're excited to have. So I think there's a beauty there. And the quote. It's so wonderful. I really like the part about a flower doesn't compete with other flowers. It just blooms the whole garden with its fragrance. You know, we don't have to be in competition all the time with each other. We can just help each other grow. I think that's a beautiful sentiment. And, this is just a wonderful piece in general. So thank you so much, Jaskaran, for sharing it with us and for submitting the audio as well.
Yeah, I agree. Wonderful, right? Beautiful, right?
The next poem is by Scraps and Scribbles, and I think it's your turn, Babbler.
Okay. This is Little by Scraps and Scribbles. This little boy is dancing in the corner. He can't be more than 5, a ball of fun. His spirit makes the gloomy bar feel warmer. He's had a day, though. Soon, he will be done. I came here for alcohol and sadness, a wedding party swinging in the back. This little one escaped 5-minute madness. He's like a little light in this place a crack. And all the heavy hitters in this hole, the losers, boozers, bikers, and the bums, are watching over him, our little soul that stole away amongst us from his mum. And then she finds him worried on her face. She scoops him up, obligatory God, his big brown eyes, last look around the place. Already drooping, he'll start to nod. So I go back to what I came here for, but still, his little shoe prints on the floor. End poem. I really like this poem. It's beautifully done. It's, you know, the scene that's painted where this person has gone to a bar to kind of like drown themselves in alcohol and sorrow and bitterness, you know, and instead they're watching this little boy who is so innocent and sweet, and kind of protecting, you know, him, these quote unquote, losers, boozers, bikers, and the bums. You know, instead of losing, boozing, and, you know, being obnoxious and bums and all that kind of stuff, are instead just kind of watching over this innocent little boy who's dancing in the corner and getting really tired as he stole away from a wedding party. So it's just like this unexpected piece of innocence and change in a role in a setting that would be otherwise kind of seedy. So I really enjoyed it. It's such a really nice, like, emotional scene. I also kind of find that, like, having a wedding with children in the back of a dive bar, like, that's a choice. But I enjoyed the poem and just being pulled into, like, this moment of a bar of watching this little boy. You kind of put yourself in the narrator's shoes. So, wonderful, right? Very emotionally effective, Faziana.
I loved it. I think it really puts you in the mindset of the person at the bar. It creates the atmosphere there, and there's just something so beautiful about the power of a child's innocence to, like, just lighten the mood in a place and just change everything. I really like the part that says, he's like a little light, this place, a crack. And it's just, he manages to be like the nightlight that kind of like shines away the darkness of the losers, boozers, bikers, and bums. And it changes the attitude of him and maybe everyone there. And even when he tries to go back to his glumness, he sees the little shoe prints. And that's just the way it says, but still, his little shoe prints on the floor. It just shows you that, like, he's still affected by it. I think it's absolutely beautiful. And this is so familiar. I was stuck in the airport in Vancouver the day before yesterday, and everyone was just, like, so grumpy and freaking out because we were on the plane and we got kicked off the plane because there was something wrong with it. So we got off and they're like, we don't really know what we're going to do. Will there be another plane? Will we fix this? You're just going to have to hang out for a few hours while we figure it out. So everyone was just, like, going crazy. There was yelling people everywhere. It was just grumpiness, grumpiness, grumpiness. But there was this one young mom with a little tiny baby, and the baby was just like giggling because the mom's like bouncing around trying to stop the baby from crying, and the baby wasn't crying at all. Everyone else was, but the baby was just like giggling and looking so adorable, and then everyone just kind of watched the baby and calmed down, and, you know, kids just have that power. So it was just, this reminded me so much of that moment of, you know, I managed to stay calm because I was watching that little baby be calm and be so much more patient than all the grumpy adults. And it just, it's magic. And I think that Scraps and Scribbled captured that magic beautifully.
I love that. I think you're right. They're very adjacent and similar scenarios. Little, you know, just mood lightening moments from children, whether they mean them, you know, to cause them or not, just by being. That does not sound like a fun airport stay either. That sounds terrible.
It was not. They gave us a $10 coupon for any of the restaurants because we were going to be stuck there all day. And the thing is that all day was from 6 p.m. until, I don't know, like midnight. And all for some reason, everything was closed. Like, you would think at an international airport, things would be open until fairly late. At 6 o'clock, everything was closed. So we were like, okay, so you gave us $10 so we wouldn't starve to death, but there's nothing. There's nowhere to spend.
Yeah, there's nowhere open.
There's nowhere open. So we all had vending machine stuff, which the coupon did not do anything for. It was just one of those things. there was this older woman, though, who was adorable, and she was reading everyone's palms. And because there was this one younger girl who was freaking out because she was like, what if we go back on the plane and it crashes because they couldn't really fix it? And so the lady looked at her hand and she said, oh, no, look at your lifeline. You're going to be fine. You're not going to die today. And then everyone else was like, shut, tell me. So she just, like, calmed everyone down.
You're going to die today. That's the bottom
line. That would be scary. Anyway, sorry, I got sidetracked in my airport stories. This next poem is called A New Beginning by Angel Wings. Embarking on a new journey to pursue a college degree, a bright path, a new beginning, determination was the key. In my 40s and back to school, it was such a scary feeling. I wasn't sure what to expect, but it surely looked appealing. A single stay-at-home mother and seeking to find a career, with my knowledge and ambition, my goals would soon appear. Meeting each challenging times with all assignments and tests, facing many obstacles, but I tried my very best. I fought my fears and worries and all those little quirks, earning a college diploma in the field of social work. End poem.
Great read, Afasiana. I enjoy this, right? It's very simple and straightforward. The rhyming is gentle, and sometimes just, like, simple nuggets of truth are worth saying, you know. Hey, I did this. You know, I got a college diploma after being a stay-at-home mom, you know, and that's so hard to do, you know, like, in your 40s, to decide to change careers or start a career and change your life path and, you know, change gears completely. And to go to school, it's really challenging. You know, college is really set up for people coming straight out of high school. And they try to say that, like, it's not, anybody can do it, but it's really not set up very well for anybody who's not in that scenario. So, I mean, this is, you know, a triumphant piece of a new beginning. You know, this is a really large obstacle that they overcome. I don't know, a rather simple piece that's, like, inspiring and motivating from, you know, for the reader to see, like, hey, you know, I did it. And maybe the reader can think, well, you know, maybe I can do something similar. You know. So I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was well done and straightforward and clearly communicated and a nice rhyming piece. What did you think?
I agree. It has that kind of inspirational motivation of, you know, we can do this. And it fits with the U-turn because, you know, she was going down one path of her life and she decided to go a different way and have this career. And good for her. And it is definitely challenging going back to school in your 40s and facing that fear. I think that's wonderful that she did it, and this has a lighthearted kind of flow to it. It's like you can tell that she's happy about it, and it flows through that you can't, like, read it without smiling. It has that feeling like she's smiling as she writes it, and you can feel it.
I think you're right. It does feel like a smile, doesn't it? It feels like someone who's happy. I don't know. It's a sunny right. Great comment.
Our next poem is by Blues Man. Would you please read that one?
Absolutely. This is Reaper, September 26, 2016, Reapers. 40 years of dormancy seemingly ended overnight when my hepatitis C began to win this fatal fight. 10 months of nausea plagued by my every waking day, fighting for my life in Obamacare's passion play. Stage one when I was really stage three, but doctors were relentless as they championed for me. A six-month gauntlet of tests to free me from this bane had finally paid off, and so I succumbed to spiritual rain. September 26th, the first of four prescriptions came. Now I have a new lease on life, and I'm back in the game. I took the last pill last week and ended 40 years of fear. Now the sky's the limit with this new life I hold so dear. End poem. I like this piece. It feels very personal because it's so specific. You know, there's exact date associated with it. There's an exact disease associated with it. You know, like it feels very personal because there's so many very specific details. You know, whether or not it's 100% true is one thing. You know, it feels like it is. Sometimes writers are really good that way. But, like, you know, to battle, you know, the Hep C and the daily pain and, you know, trying to overcome all of this, never mind whatever political shenanigans are taking place, and to finally get freedom from it when you think that there's a good chance you could die or just be in severe pain for the rest of your life, to be granted that freedom to the point where you remember the exact date. And to feel like reborn, you know, to understand that you have all of these possibilities still before you. Sometimes when I talk about grief and fear and that kind of thing, you know, I feel like the only thing people actually grieve the loss of possibility. And that, in my mind, includes, you know, all the possibilities that come with life. You know, anything can happen as long as you're alive or someone is alive, and that really grief happens when those possibilities are no longer possible. You know, when somebody dies, all the what ifs, you know, coulda, woulda, shouldas, are thrown into stark contrast because they are now never has been, never will be. And that's the pain. And so to really be staring those in the face, and like all the things that you never did that you wish you'd done, and then to be told, just kidding, you're not dying, you have another chance at this, you know, to take those reins and act on all of the things that you almost regretted never doing, I think is really powerful. So I really enjoyed this write. It was really well done. It felt very personal. It felt very sincere. And it had a good, great underlying message of just personal empowerment, you know, taking life by the horns, so to speak. So I thought it was an excellent write. What did you think, Louisiana?
I'm really happy about that, that there's the happy ending here. I like that it has the specific, like, the recognition of, like, this day changed things for me. You know, people gripe about all the pills they have to take, myself included, but really it is a privilege to be able to get the medication that we need to get better and to celebrate the ability to heal because of that day that the medication came. I mean, I think that's wonderful. I was happy to see the doctors were relentless as they championed for me. that can be a rare experience. Sometimes you have to champion for yourself and fight them to pay attention. So it's really nice to see that. I like the battle terms that are used throughout, like, you know, championed, the gauntlet of test, freed me from this bane, succumbed. The words that make it sound like gladiator style, because that's what it can feel like when you're really sick and you're fighting off like this problem within yourself. I think that that's really a powerful metaphorical way of putting it, to turn it into that battle. I think that it's wonderful that he shared this as a U-turn, because while it might not have been a U-turn in terms of like so much a choice, it is a U-turn in his life. It's a huge thing when you're able to be healthy enough to do things, to change and see yourself having a future. It's wonderful. I don't know. This is just full of hope. I'm loving these U-turns because they're having such positive turns. Thank you, Bluesman, for sharing this.
You say that, and now I feel like we're going to pull one where things turn for the worse, because there's always a contrary in the group.
As soon as I said it, I'm getting ready for it. Let's see if Randall's going to make me cry. This next poem is called A Born Warrior by Randa Yosri. Under the cloud of war and bloodlust, fighting life savage and cruel with her deadly honed sword, with the warrior's stealth, earning her way through the battle, skilled with all weapons and combat abilities to face life's challenges. Life compels her tyrannic dominance, happiness being pushed aside. She was forced to watch her hanging on a cross of iron. She courageously launching endeavors to free comfort from slavery, rushing up to him and hugging him like a war bride. The exiled hopes gathering together some troops, preparing to fight till the sun goes down or life goes out, as she experienced her fair share of battle wounds. End poem.
A great read of Phasiana. Not quite the negative turn, which is good. I mean, there's a turn, you know, where it goes from happiness being pushed aside as she was forced to watch her hanging on a cross of iron. Not so positive, but it's also not entirely negative, because, like, finding fortitude to go to war for something that you care about or believe in, you know, is not a negative thing either. I think it's a strong trait. You know, it's important to have. So, you know, as I'm reading it, you know, to like courageously launching endeavors to free comfort from slavery, rushing up to him and hugging him like a war bride. You know, it's so interesting, like the wording choice. I'm trying to like piece together, you know, it almost feels like the she in this is a personification of something, like maybe a country. I'm tempted to say Ukraine because it's about the right age for that, but I don't want to overread into it. But I feel like the she here is really kind of a personification of something that's not an actual woman, which I find interesting. And that's just based on some of the, you know, the word choices, you know, her tyrannic dominance, you know, launching endeavors, hugging him like a war bride, but not as one, you know, the exiled hopes gathering together some troops, preparing to fight till the sun goes down, you know, like a last push, as she experienced her fair share of battle wounds, like maybe she is the hope, you know, the unification or the reason itself for the battle. So I really enjoyed the piece. I thought it was well done. and really kind of picks up that call to action, that call to defense or the response. So I thought it was a wonderful piece. Well, what were your thoughts, Aviviana?
I kind of thought that the emotions were being personified. Like, happiness was pushed aside and hanging on a cross of iron. Comfort was freed, and she hugged him. Hope had been exiled, but then gathered together again. I feel like the emotions are being, I don't know, I thought it was sort of like, now a more serious version of this, but Inside Out, the kids movie, when each of the emotions is like a little person, like there's sadness mm-hmm. and joy and anger. I kind of feel like maybe this is the woman is kind of capturing all these different feelings that she has in order to survive and honing them together and putting that happiness and hope and all of those bits that the world tries to stomp down, pulling them together to be able to survive. But I mean, I could just be making up my own crazy version of it, but that's how I understood it, and I really enjoyed it.
No, I think you're right. I think it is the personification of those emotions. As you're reading through it, I think you're exactly right. It's, you know, this woman or the warrior that kind of is this whole person gathering up all the little bits of herself. I think you're exactly right. My brain just didn't quite piece it all together. I just knew that there was something that's not exactly as it seems straightforward. but I think it's a wonderful write. Great comment, Apisiana.
Thank you. This next one is for you to read. It's by Chaos in the Calm.
Right. This is Original Sin of Chaos. By Chaos in Calm. I was a good little boy once, attending church every Sunday, Bible class too. In fact, it's the only book to this day I've ever read cover to cover. Our parents weren't really religious, but hey, it got five kids out of the house every weekend till lunchtime. Sold. My parents weren't silly, just practical. 3 a.m. and in bed by 7 p.m. every night until you leave school, or 18, whichever came first. I was lucky. I had 8 jobs by my 11th birthday. Then it happened. The girls at work, of which there were many, found out my secret. I was saving myself. This, they thought, was a challenge. Let me tell you, girls do not play fair. At one point, there were bets who would get me in bed first. Hell, I was an 18-year-old with 112 phone numbers, but no winners, unless you count the ride home on my motorcycle and all the scantily clad ladies. At 20, I met her. She was an au pair from the Czech Republic. Her name was Sarka. She had the most beautiful brown eyes and olive skin, passion like no other. I planned everything for months. It would be perfect, and it was. We spent a night under the stars, walking and dancing by the sea. I had read that the first time might not be so great. Really? I had arrived at our hotel early, decorated it with far too many flowers, rose petals everywhere. It looked like a flower massacre. We had several bottles of champagne, and beautiful music filled the air. How we laughed, talked, and kissed. We may not have prayed that night, but God did get mentioned several times in a breathless kind of screaming fashion. 3 hours later, and 2 very sore, lost-voiced people emerged. Well, I did. She slept. I went to get breakfast and lilies. I'll never forget that beautiful smile as she woke, or her face as she saw the breakfast I'd cooked. We shut the doors and didn't come out for 3 days. Laughing once more, finding it difficult to walk, she had a glow that everyone noticed, but not before. the engagement ring on her finger. End poem. Well, this is an interesting piece. I mean, it's a very personal, like, intimate piece, you know, but to say that, hey, you know, I don't intend to have sex until I'm married, and then for people to take that as a challenge, you know, it's like, that's really disrespectful, you know. But also the framework this in a setting where there clearly was a rough upbringing, you know, like parents who were just very practical. It sounds like kind of hardened, you know, get up at 3 a.m. and go to bed at 7 p.m. Like, that is way too early to go to bed. And 3 a.m. is way too early to be getting up. You know, like, why are you getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning? You know, there's a good chance that this is not in the U.S., and maybe things work differently in a way that I'm not familiar with. But 3 a.m. to 7 p.m. seems kind of strict. And then every night until you leave school or you turn 18, whichever comes first. So it's like, you know, it kind of seems implied that you get kicked out of the house. You know, like, oh, you're 18, get out. Or you graduated, get out. Which also seems harsh. Maybe I'm over-reading into that. But to then be challenged again, despite, you know, like, working all the time and having strict parents and having all these rules, and then to be challenged again by your peers just because you're not interested in having sex with someone that you don't have, you know, a committed to the point of marriage relationship, it's just, I mean, at that point, it's like another drop in the bucket. You know what I mean? Like, if you have the kind of fortitude to deal with that kind of upbringing, you kind of have the fortitude to deal with your peers. You know, that seems, I think, at least in my experience, small potatoes comparatively. And then to talk about the woman that he does meet and does end up sleeping with and getting engaged to, and that, of course, being the linchpin of the poem, you know, it sounds like he succumbs to the peer pressure and decides that he's going to sleep with this woman despite his earlier commitment to himself. But then it turns out, no, not really, because they're engaged to be married, so... He feels like he kept to himself, and it's yet another victory for him. So I thought this was an interesting piece, and there's a clear change in, you know, their experience as a person. Maybe not so much their mindset, but in their life in general. So I thought it was a nice write. What did you think of Hasiana?
Yeah, I felt very sorry for them in the beginning with the 3 a.m. to 7 p.m. part two and the 8 jobs by the 11th birthday. I mean, I think I started working at 12 and I had 3 jobs at once because they were all very small jobs. But 11 jobs by the time, or 8 jobs by the time you're 11 and working, like, clearly before and after school, that's just exhausting. And then I agree with the pressure of everyone trying to challenge that choice of not, you know, of trying to wait until marriage. I mean, I'm not religious, and I'm not going to pretend that I did that, but the thing is that the pressure is just not fair. Like, I don't know, I think that... If I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, I think the author here is a man, and I feel like there's a different pressure put on men than women in terms of this. Like, you know, there's a certain, like, women are, like, not supposed to do it, and men are, which doesn't make sense in terms of balance in many ways, but I feel like it hints at that pressure. That isn't really talked about very much in the same way that, you know, we talk about the pressures that women face. So I like that it kind of exposes that. And I like the change here because his interactions with women are the fact that he is, like, pursued. But then he finds someone who he wants to go after, and not go after, this sounds too aggressive, like to be with. And it's not that chased down feeling anymore. It's the enthusiasm, and that is the change. You can tell by the description of her and the romantic, setting that they did, that it was an important connection. I like the touches of humor. Like, it looked like a flower massacre. We may not have prayed that night, but God did get mentioned several times. There are these humorous bits that I really appreciated in this. And there is that staying true to himself or their self with the that it was a serious relationship, even if it wasn't after marriage, that they kept that commitment of it being not just a little fling with someone who was one of the many numbers and people who rode on the back of the motorcycle. So I thought this was a very nice piece.
Yeah, agreed. I did also appreciate the little tidbits of humor, kind of tucked in, kind of snide comments in a way. Not quite snide, but, very tongue-in-cheek. So, excellent observation.
Now, that was the end of that contest. I do have some carryovers from Double Helix that I've had for a while because we just keep having these themes that take over the whole show, which is wonderful. We've had 2 weeks of our autism awareness shows, and we've had amazing poems for that. But I have neglected my my contest with the Tyrion quotes, so I'm going to throw a few of those in here while we have a little bit of time left. And this one is by Weaver of Dreams. And the prompt was, "Perhaps that is the secret. It's not what we do so much as why we do it," which is a quote, Tyrion Lannister in Game of Thrones. "Again, with disgust and dread, I perceive that overwhelming, damning, shameful need slithering, sliding into my mind. I thought to keep it at bay. The cage, constructed and crafted, with tendrils of will, strands of hatred, straps of disregard. They should have held it, disallowed any contact with my conscious mind. I have found that the weapon of my downfall is strong, as I have acknowledged what I crave only to myself. Might that be the first step? If I allow free rein to this murky desire, perhaps I might then understand the why. Oh, so clever, almost clever enough. Ego and superego have warned me, as they should. Ego makes me face reality, superego morality. I snap the lid of the cage closed once more." End poem.
Great reading this quote, but I also really like the way the author here took it. It's not so much that they do something being the action that they're taking as it is the not doing and the why they don't do it, which is just as important on why you do things as why you don't do things. They sense this temptation, this wanting to do something that they shouldn't be doing. They don't really get into exactly what it is. They only just say that it's something they shouldn't be doing. To me, it almost sounds like an addiction, perhaps, with just some of the words that are used. The tendrils of will, strands of hatred, straps of disregard. They should have held it, disallowed any contact with my conscious mind. But I found the weapon of my downfall is strong, as I have acknowledged what I crave only to myself. It sounds maybe, but also maybe not. It's just really kind of not defined, but it also doesn't really matter. They kind of play with this idea of like, well, maybe if I do it, then I'll understand why I want to do it because I don't really understand the why. But instead they're like, oh, no, that's just the desire to do it being sneakier. no matter who, what, where, why, when, it's not something I should do. And they just kind of snap the possibility closed, which is the what they do. You know, what did they do? They say, no, I'm not going to do that. And the why is because it's wrong, whatever it is. You know, it's not something they want to do. It's something that they perceive with disgust and dread. So they refrain from doing it, which I think is just as important. I like it. It's like an oppositional take, but not a negative take. And in fact, it's almost like a more informative take of the theme. So I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was well done. You know, the talking yourself out of a bad decision that you want to make, but you don't. So excellent write from Weaver of Dreams. What are your thoughts, Faziana?
I really loved this. I think it had that kind of reflective way of talking, and it's like it's in some ways a little bit formal in its language, but also very direct in an informal way. And I feel like that sums up like the way that Tyrion talks too. So it fit with that, connecting with the character. But it had that kind of vagueness that worked well, because we don't know exactly what this desire is. And so it's not a judgment about whether what they desire is okay or not okay. It's the process of deciding how to deal with it that it is. It's not about judging a specific thing. It's about understanding the way that your mind is working. I really liked the cage constructed and crafted with tendrils of will, strands of hatred, straps of disregard. The idea that your mind is made of all of these things, like your willpower, the things you hate about yourself or about the thing, the disregard for what you want, having that build the cage is just such an interesting concept to me. I thought this was incredible.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I also really appreciated that they kept the what undefined, because it's not the point. So I thought it was excellently done for that reason. Excellent comment.
I think we have time for one more. Will you please read the one by Stephen T. Wellman? And I should say that the prompt of this was, never forget what you are. The rest of the world will not. Wear it like armor.
This is Living Proof by Stephen T. Wellman. Let your truth speak. Tangerine twilight tickles tired eyes. Silent silhouettes stand stoically. Wicked winter winds whisper in my ear. Bitter cold wraps around my neck. All my ghosts think they own me. A checkered past thinks it can hurt me. Dreams and dark corners no longer taunt me. I wrestled with the dark. I hid the marks well. I wore the mask well. And when asked if I was okay, I'd smile and be on my way. I'm no longer a smoking chimney. No more blowing smoke screens. My 2.5-pack-a-day habit is gone. I no longer drink to take off the edge. I lived on the edge. The blade cut deep. We slowly bleed the secrets we keep. Darkness and emptiness is never your friend. Yet we bathe in it and pretend we are okay. It's okay not to be okay. It's okay to be lost at times. A tin foil facade only shines for a moment. I wasn't created to shine for a moment. Neither were you. You can't burn a candle at both ends. It only shortens your lifespan. You were created to shine. Never hang your head in shame. Never let them douse your flame. I've received bruises from short fuses. They don't define me. They do remind me pain is a treasure. Unconditional love fills in all your empty spaces as it embraces all of you. You are incredibly crafted, art, and shine your truths. A lighthouse in the dead of night. reminding others hope always finds a way. And it does. Believe me. It's the truth. I'm living proof. End poem. Journey this takes you on. It pulls you in instantly with that alliteration. That first stanza is very alliterative. You know, the tangerine twilight tickles tired eyes, silent silhouette stands stoically, wicked winter winds whisper in my ear. You know, it's a very, very pull you in because there's just so much repetition there. But then to turn around and be like, all my ghosts think they own me. The word think implying that, of course, they don't. You know, I am not my past. Like, that's not who I am. And then to talk about exactly what that means, you know, like, I did well pretending to have beaten my demons, but I actually have now, you know. I am no longer a smoking chimney. You know, they quit smoking, they quit drinking, because those things were more hurtful than helpful. And then they kind of go into, like, the lessons learned during that experience. You know, you slowly bleed the secrets that you keep. You know, that darkness and emptiness that you kind of wallow in is not a good thing, and that it's okay to struggle. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to feel bad. You know, negative feelings aren't bad. I say feel bad, but it's really like feel negative. Yeah, and this is something I've found that I've communicated to people so many times. Like, there aren't bad feelings. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be depressed. They're negative emotions, but they're not bad emotions. Like, they're just as valid and just as important as all of the positive emotions. They're necessary. They're a part of being human. So feel them and be okay with that because they're not bad. And I think part of it is that labeling as something bad or something you don't want and something that shouldn't happen is something that people struggle with. And I feel that kind of communicates this the same way, you know. A tin foil facade only shines for a moment. You know, pretending that you're okay when you're not okay doesn't last very long because you were never okay. I also like to play on words there in that stanza. You know, it only shortens your light span instead of lifespan. Because it's a candle that's burning at two ends and you're supposed to shine, you know. And then that kind of plays back to that idea of the tinfoil facade, you know. Don't be fake. Be something real. Be something that actually shines. And don't let people, like, douse your flame or dim your flame because that's who you're supposed to be. Kind of, you know, figure out who you are and be that and shine that and exude that. Just kind of the overall lesson I get from this. And then, of course, their title, you know, Living Proof, is like, because that's what I've done, is kind of the implication. So I enjoyed this piece. I thought it was nice, the kind of narrative that kind of pulls you in and ties you into their story and then what it means. So that was a great write. What did you think of Faziana?
I love this one. I gave it a silver medal, and I'd be okay with giving it higher. I mean, I thought the part with the smoking was really interesting. I'm no longer a smoking chimney, no more blowing smoke screens, because smoking works in many ways here. I think he actually did quit smoking, but also he's no longer, like, the angry one. I'm picturing, like, you know when there's the cartoon and there's, like, the smoke that comes out of the ears? That shows, like, they're, like, freaking out. He doesn't have that over-boiling kind of anger. He's not blowing smoke screens. He's not hiding who he really is. I feel like the smoke was used in multiple layers in that part, and that a lot of lines in this do that. The twilight tickles tired eyes, I think you pointed out as alliteration, is really fantastic, not only because of the alliteration, but, I mean, tickling of the eyes is not something I've ever heard before, but the idea of a certain light hitting you in a way that you, like, your eyes feel it, is just, I don't know, I loved the way that was worded. And then wicked winter wind whispers, again, with the alliteration, but Something about alliteration when it's used with W's just really works well. Wicked winter winds whisper. I love the way that sounds. I no longer drink to take off the edge. I live on the edge. The blade cuts deep. I really love the use of edge there. And, you don't take off the edge. You embrace it. You are willing to face that pain to be able to really feel your true self. I really love that. We slowly bleed the secrets we keep. Yes. So, yeah, we don't get an obvious cut maybe if we hold it in, but it's hurting you. It's killing you from the inside. And there's that line that you pointed out already, a tinfoil facade only shines for a moment. I think that's such an amazing line. Like, that's really stuck with me. I commented on that 11 days ago, and I still, that line has been stuck in my head because I just love it. So this was wonderful, Stephen. Thank you so much for writing it and sharing. And it does
agree.
Not work
I
if we... yeah, go.
Just agreeing
and...
with you again. Yay, delays!
Yay, delays! It might be my brain and not my phone. I'm not sure. it's hard to say. Is it technology? Is it aphasiana? Is it the fact that it's late at night and I haven't slept in very well the last little while? Possibly. we don't really have time for another poem. If we did, we would be squeezing it in and not giving it full comments. And I want to give everyone's poem their justice, have time to talk about them. So that's going to be all of our poetry for tonight. I would like to thank Babbler for being awesome. Thank you, everyone who wrote. We got amazing poetry. As always, I'm always so happy with the entries that we get in our contests. Even when we don't get a lot of entries, like the Contronyms only had 3, they were all really good. And I appreciate the time that people put into it. And the, I don't know, it's just... I'm constantly amazed by the quality that we get, and I feel a little, like, silly sometimes judging things that I'm like, I couldn't write this, but I have to make choices, so you're all wonderful, and thank you, Phil, for giving us this time to do the show. We will have more contests, of course, so keep an eye on Babbler on All Poetry and myself, Aphasiana, because there's always some kind of contest going on to be on our next shows. Do you have one going right now that you want to plug?
It's not going yet. I have about halfway written. the theme will be blindness.
Ooh.
So, different kind of interpretations of what that means. So, that'll be my contest. I'm hoping to have it up by tomorrow. So, that's my goal.
Awesome. All right. Watch out for that contest. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And I hope that we'll see you around All Poetry soon.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good night.